I begin the talk this evening with a quotation from the Kyojo Kaimon, commenting on the three pure precepts. The Kyojo Kaimon, as I indicated last time, is the teaching of the precept. Writings on the teachings of the precepts. That would be a good translation. This is the cave where all dharmas of all Buddhas arise. This is the root origin whence all Buddhas and dharmas arise. The dharma of the supreme way is the way to do and have done. All Mahayana traditions include the 16 bodhisattva precepts in the Jukai ceremony. But not all of them, not even those in Zen, include all 16 in the curriculum of religious training. In the Rinzai school, for example, the vows of refuge and the three pure precepts are recited during sutra services, but only the 10 grave precepts are studied as koans. Harada Roshi, Harada Sogaku Roshi, brought the vows of refuge and the three pure precepts into the curriculum of his monastery, Hoshinji, and his successors in the Sambo Kyodan and in other lines continue the practice. Our innovation in turn is to provide a place for their study by all students, not just those who have begun work on koans, and not just those who want to do Jukai, but in open meeting. In our last class, we took up the three vows of refuge and discussed the three treasures. The other 13 bodhisattva precepts, and indeed all other precepts and all other teachings, flow from these three treasures and our vows to take refuge in them. Tonight, I would like to take up the three pure precepts and then to speak extemporaneously about the place of precepts in Zen study with what I can make of a historical overview. I had intended to talk about the Rakusu tonight, but that was taken up pretty fully in last discussion after the class. Incidentally, that class was taped, so if you missed it, the tape is available to you here at Kokoan. We encounter the three pure precepts in the first three lines of our mealtime sutras. The first taste is to cut off all evil. The second is to practice all good. The third is to save all beings. May we all attain the way of the Buddha. The injunction to cut off evil and practice good originates in classical Buddhism, possibly in Shakyamuni's own time. One of the early forms is found in the Dhammapada, a very early collection of Buddhist gathas. Buddhist didactic poems. Renounce all evil, practice all good, keep your mind pure. Thus all the Buddhas taught. And I tell the story in Taking the Path of Zen about the dialogue between Bird's Nest Roshi and Po Chui, governor of his province, a renowned poet, renowned to this day, whose work you can find translated by Arthur Whaley in a number of Whaley's anthologies, and also in Whaley wrote a biography of Po Chui, a poet he liked very much. Anyway, their dialogue ends with the poet saying to the teacher, "Renounce all evil, practice all good, keep your mind pure." Why, I knew that when I was 3 years old. And Bird's Nest Roshi, from up his perch in the tree, says, "Yes, the three-year-old child knows it, but the 80-year-old person cannot put it into practice." Why can't one put it into practice? Because there is a gap between knowledge and practice. And what is it that closes that gap? Internalization or personalization, making intimate. Fables, proverbs, vows, precepts, and commandments have provided skillful means for all religions from the beginning of history. But they are useless unless they are made personal, made intimate. We know that we should meditate. We know that we should be moral. We need guidance and support structures of many kinds to help us carry out these lofty aspirations. But the tool is the body. However fine the words, they are only shadows unless they are metabolized. The third line of the Dhammapada reads, "Keep your mind pure." The third line of this gatha in the Dhammapada. Keep your mind pure. Purify yourself. This is one of the principal injunctions of classical Buddhism. And it is certainly the principal injunction of modern Theravada Buddhism. It is important advice for us all. But with the rise of the Mahayana, religious emphasis shifted from the ideal of personal purity to the ideal of oneness with the universe, and the wording of the third line was changed to save the many beings. I want to comment on this point a little more when I speak extemporaneously. There were other changes in the version formulated as the three pure precepts. The first line becomes a vow to keep the precepts, that is to say, to keep the 10 grave precepts. So instead of reading, "Renounce all evil," the line became, "Keep all precepts." Though, as we see in the Mealtime Sutras, the more negative vow to cut off all evil is retained in other versions. And as the gatha became a vow, the fourth line of the original gatha, "Thus all the Buddhas taught," was dropped. The three pure precepts in the Jukai version read, keep all precepts, practice all good dharma, save the many beings. With this shift in wording, evil is not retained as a negative abstraction, but is identified with specific kinds of behavior, killing, stealing, misusing sex, and so on, that interfere with the process of realization for the self and others. Good is similarly not the good, but is used as a modifier of dharma. Practice all good dharma. Dharma means things. And with this meaning, the line could mean do good things. However, the other meaning of dharma, implied by the word good, is the way of the Buddha. This way lies beneath and infuses all phenomena and actions. Practice Buddha's way is the deepest implication of the second line. Maintain, practice all good dharma. Practice the Buddha's way. Thus, the reference to good and evil in the three pure precepts is not to an abstract code, but to attitudes that lie at the source of thinking and doing. Good is integrity and clear understanding. Evil is self-centered preoccupation. The upaya of the three pure precepts appeals to our integrity and serves as a vital reminder. One can understand the first two lines of the three pure precepts. First two lines, keep all precepts, practice all good dharma. One can understand these first two lines as the sword that kills, the sword that gives life. Cutting off all evil and keeping the precepts. This is the moral via negativa. That is the moral negative way. Stop that. It won't do. Cut off that evil. Yes, you are right. I see your point. Such expressions of encouragement form the sword that gives life. One sword kills and the other gives life, but the two are actually a single upaya of the great Tao. Now swung this way, now that way. And the first two lines of the three pure precepts show the way to achieve the precept of the third line. By following the precepts and practicing good actions, one saves the many beings. We find echoes of the great vows for all in the three pure precepts. The sword that kills, the way of the ten grave precepts, is the second of the great vows to cut off the three poisons of greed, hatred, and ignorance. The sword that gives life, to practice good dharma, is the moral reflex of the fourth of the great vows to attain to the way of the Buddha. The third line of the three grave precepts to save the many beings is, of course, the same as the first of the great vows. The third of the great vows, to understand the vast and fathomless Dharma, is at the heart of all precepts and of all action. seeing clearly the emptiness of all perceptions and things that are perceived, there is no ego to be served by others, no poisons, nothing to be attained. All morality arises here. This is the Buddha. The way of the Buddha is the Dharma. The world of the Buddha is the Sangha. Avoiding the three poisons, I take refuge in the Dharma. Practicing the Tao of honor and integrity, I take refuge in the Buddha. Enhancing the life of friends and family members, of animals and plants, and all the many beings of the earth, I take refuge in the Sangha. The three pure precepts are simply the vows of refuge in different words. Okay, now I want to speak a little about the place of the precepts in our study. Yesterday afternoon, Dr. David Chappell brought his class to the Kokuan Zendo, and we had a nice time together, talking and doing zazen. And David himself, who is a scholar of Chinese Buddhism and very knowledgeable, asked, "What happened that the practice and teaching of mindfulness seems to have died out, at least to some extent, in modern-day Mahayana?" And he linked this very shrewdly to the weakness in the teaching of the Vinaya. The Vinaya is the moral basket of the Tripitaka, the three baskets of scrolls, in other words. Tripitaka is the Vinaya, the sutras, and the shastras. Sutras are the teachings of the Buddha, and the shastras are the commentaries. The Vinaya came first. And David pointed out that in Chinese times, in the Tang period, a monk or a nun would study the Vinaya for several years and then go on to the specific practice of choice, such as zazen. Of course, zazen could have gone along with the study of Vinaya, but intensive zazen or esoteric practice or Pure Land practice. What happened there? Well, I'm not enough of a scholar to be able to comment about the process of change and to trace it, but certainly it's a different story today in Zen. The precepts are placed at the end of koan study. And there is only a slight, maybe this is not fair, there is only moderate emphasis on application in this study. They are treated as koans. Part of this, of course, is the monastic system itself. The four vows carried to their logical application are really quite revolutionary. And if carried to their logical application, would actually be dangerous to any kind of organized government. So the monastery became rather encapsulated. And beings really, Dogen Zenji, Dogen Zenji says here, I pledge to establish these precepts as the essential teaching for human beings and devas. Lots of beings are left out of that statement. So we need to experiment with the application of precepts. We need to experiment in teaching. I need to experiment in teaching, and you do too. What the guidelines for application of the precepts might be. When we look at our Sangha, we realize that we are a kind of monastery. There are no walls. People work in the community. They live as householders, raise families, and so on. But what a connection do we have with this place, this Hawaii? People move freely back and forth to the mainland. But not everyone moves freely back and forth into the community, and certainly as an organization we have very little outside intercourse. I am not quite sure where to go with this. But I'm also not sure that save the many beings, practice all good, and keep all precepts. I'm not sure that the application of this is really full, simply in the individual action in the community. While the Sangha, the power center, is really isolated. I seem to have run out. let me just see if there's anything in the section on the Rakusu that I didn't touch on in our discussion. I don't think so. No. Okay. Now, I would welcome your ideas, comments, questions.